Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. I'm glad you're with us today. Our goal is to bring you credible and valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. Central Coast Voices wants to really look at how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community and how we look at the long-term ramifications of change in our society, or in some cases, lack of change in our society. We're a project of action for healthy communities, and I'm glad you're with us today. We're going to talk today about a very valid and interesting topic in our community. We've titled the program Closer to Home. And today who I have with me is Jim Salio, who is the Chief Probation Officer for San Luis Obispo County, and Marguerite Harris, who is Chief Deputy and Superintendent of Juvenile Hall. You know, it's interesting. Everybody probably still uses the word juvenile hall, and at some point we may talk about the fact that I don't know why it's considered a hall, but that's always a word that's probably been around for centuries, if not decades. In 2016, San Luis Obispo County completed a $20 million expansion of the juvenile hall. And it was basically a long road and a big project because that's a drastic change. It brought about a lot of changes in how this county and a lot of counties really address not only the issue of incarcerating youth, but how we basically break the cycle of how long they're incarcerated for and whether or not they ever come back to incarceration. We'd like them to come back to society. And part of their program was the development of a project that's referred to as the Coastal Valley Academy, which is basically trying to find alternative ways of housing and dealing with incarcerated youth and their families. And frankly, the easiest way that I can describe it, which is probably a shortcut that law enforcement people may not look at as the best word to use, but let's just break the cycle. And what we need to do is find ways to break the cycle so people who were incarcerated don't want to do it again, or find good tools for them to not have to be back in that kind of environment. There's really never been a county program that in this county that was designed specifically to deal with treatment options other than what we would think of as general incarceration. And what I didn't realize in looking at the notes from my guests today is that in a lot of cases, what happens to youth who can't go back into their home setting is they end up in group home settings that pretty much are not effective on a regular basis. And so we really want to look at ways that we can do things differently. I realize there's a lot of people who believe in the old adage, which is just you put people away and you throw away the key. I think it's a given that that doesn't work. It's not good for society. It's not good for what it costs society, both in the way of lost potential of our youth, but also of the incredible expense to just do that. And I'm sure there were people who were not terribly happy with the county spending a lot of money on this, because there's an awful lot of people we know who just don't want to spend money on anything except making sure that they don't have to look at or deal with problems in our society. I don't know where we start. I think maybe what we need to do is look at what the problem was originally and what you chose to do differently. So either Jim or Marguerite, jump in.
Sure. So what long time ago we realized that we needed a treatment program for youth that we could work with them here in our community. And these were kids that were wards of the court, but they were not able to return back home. You know, typically about 95% of the kids we have on juvenile probation reside in their home. And that 5%, we have to send to group homes all over the state of California. And it really was a model that just really didn't work very well. The kids were far away from their homes, from their community. They would run away from those programs. They would get in trouble when they were running away, or they put themselves at risk. So we really needed to have a treatment program where we could treat them here in our community in San Luis Obispo County. In order to do this, though, we needed the space to do that. And so the juvenile hall expansion project that we just completed last year allowed us to do that. In fact, that was one of the main reasons that we got the grant from the state of California, which paid for about $13 million of the $20 million construction to provide this treatment program. And so when the program expansion was completed, we were able to open the program, and we called the program the Coastal Valley Academy, because it really was a program that's not to typical locked institutional type program. The program is locked. The kids can't walk away from it. But the way we deal with the youth there and the way we interact with the youth and the opportunities that the youth have are so much different than what is what they have in the juvenile hall. And so we've opened the program in March of 2016. And from that time, or 2017, and we've had seven or eight kids in the program so far moving through it. So far, it's been very successful as far as kids engaging in the program. We've actually had our first graduate from the program. And so we're really excited about this. And it's a collaborative relationship between the probation department. Family Care Network provides the treatment for the children at the program. So we contract with Family Care Network to do this. And, of course, County Office of Education provides the schooling and education for those kids in the program.
So Family Care Network is providing services within Juvenile Hall. It's not that they're providing services at another outside facility.
No, it's they're providing the services within Juvenile Hall, but they're also providing services when the kids go back into the community. So part of the reentry plan lots of times is the kid might go into what we call wraparound services, which is a contract service that the county has with Family Care Network.
We'll get into that in some more detail in a little bit. I want to remind folks that this is, of course, a community program at a community radio station and public radio, and you can be part of the discussion. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. Would encourage you, if you have questions or observations you want to share with my guests about this topic, that you call in early in the program, because sometimes, and actually more often than I'd like, we find people trying to get in their question at the last end of the program, and we just don't have time to fit everybody in. So if you do have part of this discussion you'd like to be part of, please join us shortly. What has historically happened in the past that has been so ineffective?
Well, I mean, historically, if you look at the juvenile justice system, there's the analogy's been that it's like going to the doctor with a headache, and they say, you know, we can either give you aspirin or a frontal lobotomy. And, you know, it's the far end of the spectrum is the California Authority. It used to be the California Authority. Now it's DJJ or CYA. That's a state-run institution for juveniles. And then on the front end are juvenile halls. And juvenile halls are meant to be short-term detention facilities. They're not long-term treatment facilities. And in the middle was what was missing. And so to fill that gap, probation in the state of California has relied on group homes, which are not locked, are usually in somebody else's community, take kids from all different parts of the state with all different types of needs, different risk levels, different sophistications, and they kind of put them all together. And some are big campus institutions, and the outcomes just for probation kids are just not really, really good. And so the state of California 2 years ago passed a law, AB 403, which basically was called Continuum of Care Reform, and basically is not licensing group homes anymore in the state of California. Group homes will be going away. And so probation had to react to that because we were losing that middle piece of our spectrum. And the idea behind Continuum of Care Reform was that kids would be raised in foster care, in foster homes, in home family homes, not in big group institutional type homes. Unfortunately, for probation kids, it's very difficult to find foster homes for probation kids, or they're just not going to be able to meet the needs of the kids. And so our response to that was to use this new Coastal Valley Academy, this new treatment program, to treat all our kids here locally, kids that we normally would have sent to group homes, to treat them here, to provide the services that they needed, that we knew they were needed, treat the family because the family's here too, and then get them home quickly back home.
The recurring theme in this discussion, and we've only been talking for about 10 minutes, is about whether or not there's an alternative to a group home or foster home environment. So I think by default that kind of implies that a good portion of the youth you're dealing with that end up in juvenile hall don't have a family support network to begin with, which affects whether or not they're ending up in juvenile hall.
Well, I think we got to draw the distinction between juvenile hall, which is a short-term detention facility, and most kids in juvenile hall go back home to their families.
Okay.
But there's a few kids in juvenile hall that we can't send back home for their families. Either the family's not able to care for them because of the kids' needs, or There's just not the level of supervision that they need, and it becomes a community protection type of issue. Mm-hmm. And so we have to put them in a structured environment where they're going to get care and treatment and work toward getting them back home to their families. We've found historically that when we send these kids to group homes, they continue to act out in the group homes. They get removed from the group homes. They're sent back to the juvenile hall. They run away from the group homes. We had one youth that burned down a group home, you know. So I mean, it's, yeah. So I mean,
nice thought. Okay. Yeah.
So it's there's a lot of inherent problems with sending kids to the group home model. And the group home model, I would argue, and I do so all the time at the state level, that it was never meant for probation kids. It was not the what it was there for. But probation had that gap in the juvenile justice system, and that filled that gap.
Yeah, we've talked before about group homes dealing with highly functional developmentally disabled people and things like that. So we're talking about people that don't have the level of difficulty with social issues necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's just an assisted living environment. So we're talking about a different kind of group home.
Yes, that's a different kind of group home.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, well, Marguerite, tell us what did you guys build?
Besides the expansion, and what I think I want to add on to Chief Salio is that the thing about the group home is that kids go away, and when you get treatment, you have to actually start addressing all the trauma. And our kids have been traumatized, been victimized. They've been abused, neglected. And I think what happens is when those kids get to those group homes, they're forced to face those issues, and they've learned to really get away from those by running or by using. And a group home isn't locked. And so they could run. And, you know, oftentimes they, especially some girls, would end up on the streets and they could be more victimized. In CVA, we have kids now who they can't go anywhere at this time. They have weekly outings, and then they can earn levels to get outings and to get furloughs. But they're forced on a daily basis because we have curriculum and we have skills building groups every day to get that sort of treatment. And they can't run away. They have to face it. And so we're pulling off those scabs, and we're getting into those wounds and really forcing them to face all those emotions, to face all those scars and of the abuse and of the abandonment and of the victimization. So, you know, now we have an environment where they can't run. And so we're getting more, I think, better progress. One youth said to me, you know, because if they have behavioral issues, they can get frozen, and it doesn't it wouldn't move them on to the next day in progress. And he said to me, you know, if people aren't getting frozen, they're not working on their stuff. And so I get frozen because I get mad because I'm dealing with this stuff. And so it's okay if I get frozen because I'm dealing with it and I'm getting better. You know, so those kind of things for the kid to have that cognitive ability to really self take a self evaluation of where they're at. Those are the kind of little aha moments that we're really proud of. So when we say we built something, we took a unit and we made it into a home. So, you know, when people who are used to seeing a juvenile hall walk onto this unit, it has leather couches, it's got area rugs, it's got, you know, chairs, it's got huge bean bags that kids can hang on, and it's got family-sized dining room table. You know, it's got a flat-screen TV. Kids can have iPod shuffles. It would be like if you were to walk into a living room at someone's home. The rooms, we still have
it's kind of boarding school, if you will.
It is. Okay. It's an academy. Okay. And, right. The kids wear uniforms, and then they can wear their own clothes at certain levels. But it really is. It is, you know, it was the chief's vision to make it home-like. And so within in a locked facility, how can you make something that home-like? But we do. And, you know, they have an outdoor area. They have Adirondack chairs they can hang out in. So they have really positive interactions with officers where, you know, they're still custodial officers, but they're engaged with those skill building groups and the ongoing curriculum that the kids are dealing with. So
as you were saying that, and I want to preface this, that I'm not trying to make this sound argumentative because I really admire what you're doing. As you explained that child that had a good understanding of what their struggle was that sometimes gets them in trouble with the struggle. My thought also is, as you said that, is that also may be a child who is probably the most proficient at gaming the system. The kids with those skills are the ones who have in some cases learned how to perpetuate a cycle, and a lot of them come from gang-focused families. And I'm wondering how you break that particular cycle. Because I'll give you an example, and we talked about it a little bit before the program. There are programs. Pedro Arroyo, who used to be with your department, who did a lot of things with youth that were kind of singled out as potential gang problems or potential problems for other law enforcement issues, and they were invited into this program to work. And he actually did some things like community gardening at Flamson Middle School and stuff like that. And in the course of the conversation with Pedro on the program, I said, you know, if you've got a kid that is a real at-risk kid, and you know that child's parents are really gang connected, but your program requires that the child's parents sign off on participation, that must be a scary household to walk into. And Pedro's answer was that most of the time they walk in that household and the response they get from that parent is, help me break the cycle. And so I think that's a lot of what it sounds like you're able to do. But some of those kids, I mean, there's 13 and 14-year-old kids that have been around that kind of gang activity and drug activity since they were toddlers, and it's the life they know. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you break that life they know.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've been in probation 28 years in this county. And so when you've been around 28 years, you have the children of the children you had on probation.
Yeah. It's generational.
And so, you know.
Teachers generally like that. Yeah. You guys don't.
Yeah. Okay. So it tends to be generational. Yeah. You know, but you're right. I do think, you know, you see those parents, and they're trying to make it, obviously, because they're still in the community. They're not away in prison somewhere. Yeah. You know, they've somehow managed to, you know, stay in the community, and they might have some problems, but they've got through it. They've got through probation, et cetera. They don't want the same thing for their kids. They want their kids to go the right way. And, you know, everybody loves their children and want their mm-hmm. children to do the best. And so those are parents that are really, you know, there, and we work with them as a partner to say, hey, how do we get them? And part of our program is not just treating the child, it's treating the whole family, because you cannot treat a child without not treating the family. It's a system mm-hmm. issue. And so one of the things we do in the program is we help the parents learn new parenting skills to be able to work with their kid and to be able to set boundaries and limits and talk to their kids and understand, you know, when they do this, their kids are going to react this way, et cetera. And so that's a very important piece of it. And so the working relationship between the probation officer and the child is and the family is really important. And our probation officers are very skilled in dealing with this. They know how to work with families. They know the kids that are gaming them. They've been doing it a long time. They get it. You know, probation officers have that good sixth sense about them. And so our probation officers are fantastic, and they do great work with the families, and they're really able to work with those kids. And they know when the kids are being sincere and not being sincere.
Mm-hmm. And every 45 days, we actually do a child and family meetings with the youth in CVA, the youth, the family, or maybe a positive person in their life, along with the probation officer and the therapist. So we work on that, so they all get together. It's basically a treatment team. So every kid will have that meeting every 45 days to engage that family.
Yeah, I'd like to come back and visit that, but I don't want to keep our caller waiting. So, Tina, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Hi.
Thanks for your patience. What's up?
Well, I want to say hi to Jim Salio, first of all, because way back when I was in juvie in, like, the late 90s, he was there. So hi.
Hi, Tina.
And I'm one of those girls that you guys were talking about that would go into custody. I had addiction issues, and I would get put in group homes or rehabs all over California and just end up running away and being on the streets up there and putting myself in more danger. And I am just so glad to hear that you guys have this new program that you're doing, because I think, you know, what would have been different for me? What if you guys had that when I was younger? Because I ended up going to jail and then prison, and, you know, I dealt with incarceration addiction issues up until my 30s. And if me and my family had to do this program that you guys have now, you know, I just wonder how different things could have been. So I'm really glad that you guys are making these changes.
Thank you, Tina.
Thank you,
Tina.
And, you know, I have to tell you that, you know, we've learned a lot over the years. And one of the things that probation, we try to do is we try to learn what's not working and how do we do things better. And you know, I'm sure, Tina, when you got sent away to group homes, it probably didn't feel very good, did it?
No. Sorry, I'm getting emotional. No.
It's okay. Just carry on with us. We're fine.
And you know, and being a probation officer, that was one of the hardest things I had to do as a probation officer, is to go tell a young teenager that, you know what, we're taking you away from your family. We're going to send you to this program hours and hours, miles and miles away from your home, and everything is going to be okay. When down inside, I knew it may not be.
Yeah, and kids are manipulative, too. Like you said, I would say all the things I needed to say to get out of juvie. Or, you know, they would ask me, are you ready to go into a program? Do you want to get clean? And I would say, oh, yes, of course. And which I might have thought I was, but I knew I just wanted to get out of there, too. So, you know, kids can be smarter than we act.
Yeah. Tina, thank you for the call, and thank you for sticking your neck out to be on the radio with us and talk about this. I know it's tough. But thank you for sharing that with us. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right,
bye. Yeah. Those are the kind of people that you'd like to hear from.
Yeah. Well, that's why we have this program. I mean, you know, we knew that group homes were not getting the right results that we needed. And it was difficult. And we were not doing the best we could to help the kids. But part of the problem was we didn't have the space to run this program. And the expansion of the juvenile hall gave us that space to do it, which was, in my mind, worth every penny that the county paid for to have this program.
Okay. There's got to be a why in the road here. And I'm wondering how you decide which kids can benefit from this program, because there's got to be – I mean, I hate to say it. There's got to be kids that it's like, this is never going to work for. And I don't know how you have to decide who ends up in the program and who – because some of the kids it may never work for may be kids that if you risk working with them in the program – may jeopardize other kids in the program. They're the kids that you'd rather not be in that building with the ones that have promise.
Right.
How do you do that balance?
You know, and I think that's, you know, the probation officers, they analyze their cases, and then we have a staffing committee that looks at that and decides if this youth is going to be a good fit. You know, they get the input from the youth and the family on whether that's going to be a good fit for not. And we've had a couple kids that have not been successful in the program, and they're back in juvenile hall, and we're dealing with them there. So it is right now we haven't run across a kid that we said, you know, this isn't going to work if the kid's committed to wanting to do it. I don't know, Margarita, have we?
Yeah, I think we do have to look at some factors of how close are they to 18, have they graduated high school, you know, what are their, you know, if they have some high, different types of risks like sex offenders, we're not putting in the program. But we have one kid who is close to 18, and he really expressed a desire to be in there. And instead of doing all this time on the detention side, so we brought him in, and he's doing well. So I think, you know, it just – We go through that staffing process. We make sure we don't want to have it jeopardize the entire program. And one kid that wasn't successful and it was jeopardizing the program. You know, the dynamics change. It's group dynamics. So, but it's a challenge. And you know, we've learned in the past how to do things better. You know, we're going to continue to learn how to do this program even better.
Yeah. Do you have some youth in this program that are actually kind of on both sides of the whole law enforcement incarceration issue? I mean, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking you may have kids that are in juvenile hall or in the academy now because of some particular crime or issue they were involved in. And if you look at their case history, they may have also been a kid that was dealing with an environment where they were the victim of a crime.
Mm-hmm.
As I was thinking about that, I was like, you know, we have the CASA program that deals with the advocacy for kids, but those are kids who have generally been in an unsafe or jeopardized role or a victimized role. But I'm thinking the line between those two parts of the community is real faint.
Right. There's a lot of crossover with the youth, and in fact the youth from probation that usually have to be removed from the home, there's a good chance that there was involvement with Child Protective Services at some point in that child's life. And so, yes, that we do have that. And that's, you know, Margaret was talking about dealing with the trauma. You know, a lot of these kids come from a place of trauma, and having to deal with that trauma is tough. And but being in a setting where they can't leave when the trauma gets too much and they just want to run away because that's the way they've always dealt with dealing with their trauma, they can. And so we've been able to make progress in that area. You know, the one thing I do want to say, though, about the kids going into the program is that every kid that's in the program has been ordered there by the court. So the judge has the final say on whether the kids go in the program or not. Mm-hmm. And so the minor has an attorney, and so they have representation, and the court then makes that final decision whether the court feels that it's a good fit or not. So really the final decision on whether a kid goes in the program or not is really up to the juvenile court.
Does their time there, if you get assigned to juvenile hall for a certain period of time as basically your punishment for a crime, mm-hmm. But in your case, you may be dealing with people who are getting assigned there because one of your people or the judge or the court is saying, you know, if we put this child back in the – this is a child that we could put back in their family in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if we could have 3 months with this child instead of sending them home after 2 weeks with their, quote, punishment done, we could have far more long-term success. So is how the court and how you look at the amount of time people are going to be there a factor you have some control over?
Well, the bottom line is that you have to have the custody time to be in the program. So, because it is a custodial program.
Okay.
So by constitutional law, the children cannot be in the program or the youth cannot be in the program longer than the custody time they have available to them based upon the crime that they've committed. Okay. So if the person had no more custody time available because they've already served all their custody time, they could not be in the program. The court cannot order them in the program.
Is there a bargaining process that goes on? So there's a judge and a lawyer for their defendant are saying, you know, they're saying, okay, this is something that they would normally spend 2 months in incarceration, and bargain with the defendant. I don't know a better word to use for it under these circumstances. That say, you know, if you're willing to be part of this program, you're going to spend a little more time there, but it's a better way to spend your time. And whether or not that's a discussion,
it isn't. It can't be done.
It can't be done. Okay,
it's constitutionally illegal to do that.
Okay. All right. Well, that's why I'm not involved in law enforcement or the law anyway. But it just because it seems like there may be some kids that if they're just dealing with petty issues, that may be great candidates for you, but you're not going to do a whole lot of good in 30 days.
No.
What's the average length of time someone's going to be in the program?
We order them to 1 year, but they do a 6-month progress hearing, and typically they can be done. They can be done with the curriculum within 5 months, typically, and then we usually try to reunite them to wherever they're going to be going within 6 months. So we'll be having our second graduate in a couple weeks, and he's actually because he doesn't have a home to go to, and he'll still be under 18 and has still to go to high school. He's going to actually be going to a foster home. That he's been to before as a 300 dependent. That's when he was in the foster care on the Department of Social Services side. So he's excited about going to the home, and he's because it is, it's a house, it's a home, it's with the, you know, with parents.
We need to give those kind of foster parents a medal.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Or a lot more money.
Yeah, a lot more money.
Probably both.
both would be helpful, yeah, I'm sure. If you want to be part of this discussion, the phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. We're talking about a new program called the Coastal Valley Academy at in our youth probation department. And it's fascinating, and it sounds like it's got great promise. And be part of the discussion if you'd like. That's 781-3875. If you haven't noticed, this is KCBX Public Radio 90.1, and we're glad you're with us today. Okay, Marguerite, so where were you in this process prior to the academy?
I was actually, when I first got involved with it, I was actually a young probation officer. Well, young in my career, maybe not young in age, but where the idea came from. Uh-huh. And back in 2008, and we actually attempted something, youth and family restoration, but we didn't have the building to do it. So as time went on, just in this, about a year and a half ago, I was asked to be on the committee to really kind of plan this whole thing as a supervisor at the time. So There was a group of probation officers, supervisors, chief deputy, and some juvenile services officers that really came together as a work group and took the chief's vision and said, within that vision, how are we going to do this based on from everything, from what the curriculum is going to be, what the daily routine is going to be, what the daily schedule, activities that they're going to do in addition to all the therapeutic work they're going to do, what they're going to wear, what the officer is going to wear. So we started in that, and then I became the superintendent of juvenile hall and became more intimately involved in just the design of it. And now I'm there every day participating, but we started and I'll be involved with the kids. We started a run club. So once a week we take the kids out. We go running, and we're partnered with Running Warehouse. They give a pair of shoes to every kid that comes into the program.
Wow.
Yeah, and so we've done about three local fun runs, and so there's a lot of – it's really kind of fun because you have a different type of engagement with the kids. Now, one of the first days we were there, I walk on, and a kid throws me a high five, and he's like, I was waiting so long to do that, you know, because he was you have a more restrictive type interactions on the detention side. So, mm-hmm. you know, just it's just more relaxed. So, you know, I've been involved with you know, pretty closely in the last year and a half, and obviously now.
So when you it's a new enough program that hopefully you remember this. Can you tell me, give me maybe a snapshot of the first couple of kids that got into the program and what it was that set them out to be good candidates to – I mean, two things. First off, I'd say – being the guinea pig can be really cool, and being the guinea pig can be really sucky. And so I'm sure that the evaluation of those first kids was tough for everybody.
Actually, all of the kids, we had five on the first day, all of the kids had been in group home care. We had two females and three young boys. All of them, I think four of them had actually also been, had kind of moved on from the dependency system and into delinquency. So they've all had been used to living outside. They, you know, been in a group home, so they understood that environment. So, and so they were proud to be the first people because they were kind of
setting into. I want to interject so I don't lose it. What was the trigger event that would have got them coming back into this program versus staying in a group home?
They ran away.
Okay.
They all ran from their group home.
Okay, so it's obviously an environment they were not happy in, or they wanted to find an alternative.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. Yeah. So that first day was in the first week, and then of course they really kind of became a little family, and they were, and like I said, the dynamics changed, but that first dynamic was really kind of cool, just because they were kind of brothers and sisters, and they were just happy to be there, and they were excited to wear their uniforms, and they were excited to be together. And the first time we took an outing, I actually sent pictures to the chief because they went to the beach for the first time. That was the first time they could actually go out as a group. And they came back, and, you know, maybe they got a little wet in the water, but one kid said to me, you know, I've never been to the beach before. And I said, how long have you lived in the county? He goes, my whole life. And I'm like, you've never been to the beach? And he's like, no. Well, once, but I never got to go in the water. You know, so it was just, you know, exposing them to those kind of real pro-social activities that they should be, you know, any normal – our kids would go and do, and they just haven't been exposed to that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm surprised the number of kids that have a rather close to home and not very worldly view into their teens. I mean, mm-hmm. My wife teaches middle school in Flamson, and she said she's had kids that have told her – you know, she talks about something in San Luis Obispo, and they say, "I've never been to San Luis Obispo. We don't go down the hill. We just live up here." So that the world they live in, I think, in some cases, sometimes is part of the problem that they don't get to see anything outside of their small tribal area, if you will. And I don't use that word lightly, but how we see people who keep close to home sometimes is not as productive as we'd like it to be.
One of the goals of the program is to connect them to their community because that's the community they're going to go back to. So one of the probation officers, when we go on weekly outings on Saturdays, takes them hiking or takes them to different community events. And he has this whole thing where, you know, basically, did you know? Did you know? And gives them a fact. So they went hiking on Madonna Mountain. well, did you know this actually isn't Madonna Mountain? It's Cerro San Luis, and it's actually one of the Seven Sisters. So he, you know, kind of like, did you know in this? And so our most recent graduate is now up in the Seattle area, and she wrote a letter back, and she said, did you know? And she wrote this, all these fun facts about what she's learning up there, and then went on to really kind of explain, you know, her gratitude towards the officers and how they're lifesavers and use those terms. And officers don't ever really get to hear that. And so it was nice to hear that feedback, that and how she's thriving and really getting exposed to now her new community. Mm-hmm.
So you started with five kids, and this is a program that's only been in place for about 4 months now. 5 months.
Okay. Yeah,
without divulging anything that's confidential, I mean, where are they in the process? Where do you see things that you've already learned from how you're doing it? And because we'll be realistic. It's not going to not have its roadblocks and bumps and diversions as you learn stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And candidly, if you don't have those kind of things to learn stuff, you weren't paying attention, and we know that.
So, no, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, we had maybe it was a month or two into the program. I can't remember. We had our first what we call a walkaway. They were on an outing, and two kids decided they weren't going to get back in the van and come back to the juvenile hall, and they just walked away and took off. So they call me. So I called my.
Are they in street clothes or uniforms?
They were in their uniforms.
Well, they're in. They have like at that time. So they were wearing like shorts and t-shirts, but they had the CVA t-shirt logo on.
Okay.
So
you know. So they didn't conspicuously look like incarcerated people, but you know who they were.
Yes. We know who they were,
okay.
And so
is not the new orange. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. No. So I got the call that they had walked away, and I said, I want them back in custody. And I used all my resources. Every probation officer I had that was available was out looking for those kids. Mm-hmm. And we got them back into custody within
5 hours.
With about 5 hours.
Yeah.
And so, but that was a good message to the kids, though, that, you know, we take this seriously, and that if you leave, we're going to come get you, and you're going to come back, and you can't just walk away. And it was also a great message for the kids in the program that didn't walk away.
Mm-hmm.
That, hey, you know, that this is serious, and
yeah, this is not a long-term solution,
right? Yeah. And so, those are the kind of bumps. But we knew that was going to happen. It's a you know, we take kids out of the community. There's always a chance that one of them will walk away. But we made sure that we brought them back in to custody, and that it wasn't okay. Where if a kid is at a group home and runs away, you know, say a kid's in a group home in Fresno and runs away, nobody does anything. I mean, we put out a missing person
days before someone notices he's missing.
But no one's looking for him. That's for sure. You know, and so that was something we learned. You know, we keep evolving as the program. Marguerite laughs at me every time I go on the unit there to the CVA program. You know, the kids are always jumping on me and
he's Disneyland
saying,
dad.
I'm Disneyland dad. That was the term I was looking for.
Yeah.
You know, we want this. And I go to Marguerite's office. Hey, well, let's get this for the kids. You know, and so we've done stuff like, you know,
can you say, I've been ignoring the kids. I'm going to ignore you now too, Jim.
No,
okay.
I can't. Okay,
okay.
I can ignore
Sorry,
the kids.
Chief. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay.
So like one of the things that the girls really wanted, they wanted to wear makeup. No, that's unheard of in a juvenile hall that wear makeup.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But this is a co-ed program, so they're guys and girls living together, and the girls feel more comfortable if they had makeup on. So I said to Marguerite, go down and get the girls' makeup. You know, not, you know, exotic, crazy makeup, but, you know,
just. It might have been crazy the first day, but it's a good life skill because it's like learn how to make your face up without, you know, looking overly made up. Yeah. And so it's a normal thing to do for a teenage girl. So, yeah, but he does come in to my office.
My kids, and so, you know, in the juvenile hall, too, we have institutional slippers that are shower shoes, and the kids wearing slippers. The kids said, you know, we really want slippers. I go, Margaret, let's go down and get the kids slippers, you know, something as simple as that. Uh-huh. And, you know, so those kind of things. So anything we can do and everything that the kids ask for, and I always weigh it against, is this something I would get my kid?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is this something that, you know, and so we have a refrigerator, and the kids have food in the refrigerator. And they go and, you know, if they're hungry, they can get something to eat. And, you know, but like a normal parent, we say, you know, we're having dinner in an hour. You can't have a snack now because we're eating in an hour, you know. But after dinner and between bedtime, if you want something, you go to the refrigerator and get a snack, you know, that kind of thing. So it's that to create that environment that this is a home and not an institution.
Yeah. What kind of program things during their day? Because obviously, you know, if if I'm in a building I can't walk away from, the day is really long.
You got to structure it. Yeah.
We keep them busy.
Okay. What kind of things are part of their day?
So they're up 7 a.m. They have breakfast. They, get their room cleaned up.
7 a.m., that's a luxury for an incarcerated community, isn't it? You can ignore that. It's okay.
Lights are on at 6:30. They have to come out of the room at 7. Okay. And then their first period of the day is actually PE. So we do a lot of different creative PE. And then they go to school. And the nice thing is that the instructor from County Office of Education has been trained in the curriculum in that what we're delivering to the youth. And so really they kind of get treatment weaved in and out of their whole day. And we're also using a technique called positive behavioral incentives and support, interventions and support. So everything is based on really having a positive perspective and using kind of the 4-to-1 ratio, which is kind of not just a PBIS thing. But so they'll go to school. They'll have usually a skills group. So they'll learn how to – something even is making an introduction, dealing with conflict, making an appropriate request, dealing with being disappointed, those kind of things. And then we have – when they do the curriculum in the afternoon, the boys go and then the girls go and to separate. And then additionally, they'll have individual counseling throughout the week. And then by that, usually after dinner, which is at 5 o'clock, after dinner, they have free time in the evenings. So they can go back to the gym and, play basketball or volleyball, be in the yard, watch TV on the unit, do homework. And then usually they need to be in the rooms at 9 o'clock. So.
Do they ever get opportunities for if they have family or foster parents in the community that they can go visit them, mm-hmm. or they can come the family can come visit them at the facility?
Yeah, there's actually a mandatory 2 1-hour visits a week. So we usually get more if possible, and if the family can do that too. And then once the kids hit a certain level, they're allowed to go out on outings, and then they're also allowed to do furloughs. So really, because especially if we're going to reunite a kid with their family, we want to start really restoring that relationship. So they'll do, just go out for a meal. They may go home for a few hours, and then they graduate to doing overnight passes with their families.
Are there any other counties? Well, I would assume there are other counties that have similar programs. How long have other programs been in place, And what have you had the pleasure of learning from programs that started long before ours?
Well, there are other programs that have in-custody programs. So when we started this, we went down and looked at, I think, Orange County.
Orange County, Ventura, Santa Barbara. I went up to I have a daughter at Portland State, so I went to Multnomah County Juvenile Hall. They do a fabulous job up there. And I think we kind of got ideas from Placer County and Santa Cruz.
So, but the way we're running the program and how we're doing it is I think is a little unique in that, none of the programs are quite the home-like environment we have. The other programs, not doing, home passes, more of a custodial program. And then when you finish your time, you're released to go back home. And those, they've been going on for quite some time, but more and more counties throughout the state are looking to go to a program like this because, as I mentioned earlier in this program, that they were, state is doing away with group homes, and so probation's kind of trying to figure out what they're going to do with their kids. And so other counties have space in their juvenile hall, and they're looking at, how do we replicate this type of program and how do we fund it and those kind of things.
Yeah. If you're just joining us because you didn't get the other part of the hour available or didn't get the memo, you can still give us a call if you'd like at 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. We have a few minutes left. We're talking with folks from County Probation today about the Coastal Valley Academy, which is a tremendously effective, in my opinion, effective way to deal with incarcerated youth as opposed to a typical juvenile hall. The community, is there still resistance out there? I mean, let me rephrase it. The law enforcement community tends to be a rather conservative community. This sounds to me like it may be seen by a lot of people as a real liberal, bad choice of words, but I can't think of another way, touchy-feely way to deal with juvenile justice. And I'm wondering what kind of resistance you get from the law, from prosecutors, what kind of resistance you get from other people involved in law enforcement.
So I haven't received any resistance from law enforcement, and typically in the juvenile—
That's great to hear.
Well, typically in the juvenile world, they, you know, it's, that's probation's issue. That's probation will deal with the juveniles, and they're more than happy to let us deal with the juveniles. And so, you know, I think from our district attorney's office, who prosecutes the juvenile cases in the juvenile court, the deputy district attorney who sits in the juvenile court has been supportive of the program, and I think they see it as a better alternative than sending kids to group homes that are really not working, because they see the churning of the kids, you know, running away, coming back into custody, running away, coming back into custody. And so in that aspect, it's that we've had support, and we've also had support from the defense bar too. They've been really supportive of trying to, you know, make sure we have the right kids for the program, and have not been resistant to the kids going into the program. So I think that's been a good collaborative along that line. And then, the rest of the whole continuum of care, you know, from drug and alcohol services to mental health treatment for juveniles, I think we have a real good collaborative working primarily in the aftercare part of the program when they leave and they go back home. So I think this community really is, very child-centered, and I think they do see this program as a really unique thing that works well for our kids, and I think they've been very supportive of it. Mm-hmm.
Do we have issues with kids who come in with addiction issues, and it's you got to work on breaking that cycle at the same mm-hmm. time?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's there are kids that and whether you can argue whether somebody who's 15 years old is a drug addict, that's kind of a tough thing to pin somebody on at that age. But certainly their use of drugs is dangerous and their use of drugs is abusive. And so we want to do everything we can to address those and treat those things.
Yeah, and some of those kids need some detox time before mm-hmm. They may be available to you physically today, but they may not be available to you to pay attention to what's going on and be part of the program for a while too. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you have a transitional way of dealing with that.
Well, I mean, the drug and alcohol piece of it, we have a drug and alcohol therapist that's available to the kids in the program. And so, and that really goes to, what is the best treatment plan? And so if that is part of the treatment plan, then that'll be incorporated.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. Linda in Arroyo Grande, thanks for waiting. You're on the
sure.
air.
I just wanted to call and say it's a great topic today, and I've been a healthcare professional in the county for about 35 years, and many years ago I worked with juvenile probation in a program that we had in San Luis Cottage Outpatient Center, and in my experience, the probation department was just an exceptional group of people, and I don't think it can be said enough. And it was said earlier by one of you that you don't often get compliments or hear about that, and I'm sure you do from the kids, though, but it was just exceptional working with such really dedicated officers and the way that they treated the children, and I say children, but they're, to me, they're kids. But it was just a pleasure, and it's been challenging for parents with adolescents in this county, I think, with funding and with the location and all of that. But I can't say enough for our juvenile probation, and I think the listeners can really hear that the dedication, the caring is there. And it's a hard population to work with. So I'm really grateful for all that you do. And, our children, our adolescents are a precious commodity. And I really appreciate all you do.
Okay. Thanks for the good words, Linda. I'm sure my guests appreciate
yes, thank
that.
Thank you,
Linda.
Thank you. Hey. Okay. I get accused of doing this a lot, so I want to make sure I get it in here because I seem to be the one that forgets about how much things cost. How expensive of this is this compared to what you were doing 2 years ago?
It's no more expensive. So what we did was we took the money that the county spends to send kids to group homes, and we just repurposed that money to run the program. And so it really was taking a nickel from here and moving the nickel over there. So we haven't cost the county any more money running this treatment program.
You want to say anything about the camp?
Well, and then we're finding ways to fund it as well. Okay. So what Marguerite's talking about is a couple of months ago, the county designated the program as a camp program under the Welfare Institution Code. And by doing that, now we'll be able to get state funding for it, which will begin in fiscal year 18-19.
Mm-hmm. So that'll give you that. That won't make it easier to run. That'll give you more resources available to expand programs.
That's
and stuff
exactly
like that.
It. Yes.
Yeah.
And with collaboration with County Office of Education, they actually, with all the PBIS, they had a grant, mm-hmm. and so we were able to partner with them and bring in training and bring in incentives for youth. So, you know, that's some money there that we can use. Partner also with Restorative Partners, and they do all our volunteer programs.
Oh, okay.
So they came in and they got a garden grant. So we are now going to be developing a whole garden that kids will actually be able to help build and then also be able to actually enjoy it and also take care of it.
Yeah. I guess I'll put one minor comment in too, because it may be important to people who aren't involved in education. PBIS programs are not law enforcement or juvenile-based programs. They're being used in schools across the state and across the country as effective ways to deal with discipline and remedial issues.
Correct.
I've heard a lot about PBIS because I have a middle school teacher.
Yes, for
a spouse. Yes,
and absolutely, the same principles that work in a classroom work in a juvenile hall. I mean, you know, it really is the fundamental thing is, you know, you need to change behavior. You need to give positive reinforcement as opposed to negative reinforcement. Yeah.
I heard skepticism from my wife for about less than a month about PBIS, and then they looked at what the great results were, that was an effective tool, and it's an effective tool in schools, and it's an effective tool, obviously, in what you guys are doing, too. So
actually, throughout the state, the juvenile detention facilities are adopting it in lieu of some new legislation that came out. So it's being used, and we're actually, as a department, we're going to be partnering again with the county office and presenting at the state conference this year.
Well, it's interesting, because what it may also give you in some cases is if you have kids that were in school before they ended up with you, hopefully they were, they may have been getting dealt with the same model of discipline issues in their classroom environment in a public school that they're then getting with you. It's like, okay, Marguerite, I've heard this before. I don't know. I guess I've got to pay attention. I mean, that's the kind of thing that I'm sure comes up from time to time.
Absolutely.
As I regularly do, I try and get out of the way for a couple of minutes so my guests can actually make sure we haven't missed anything that they think is important. So, and Jim, I think as the senior person, you probably get the last word, so I'll give Marguerite the first shot. What do you want to make sure that folks remember that we may have missed or that I may have glanced over?
You know, I think, well, thank you for this opportunity because we are actually, you know, talking. A lot of times people don't know what probation does, and it's important to get out there what we do because, you know, we are an arm of law enforcement. We're a type of law enforcement, but we are about really changing behavior. And so this is an amazing opportunity. And it's a really amazing opportunity for the officers that I get the privilege of supervising. And I think, you know, to hear those two callers call in and give that positive feedback is great because I always tell my officers that you guys are just planting seeds. And hopefully in 10 years, maybe you never know, but you're making an impact now on something that changes that may happen in 10 years. So I think, you know, we're in a really unique environment, and what we do is unique. What we do is challenging. And I feel grateful for being able to work with the people that we have. And this is just a fabulous opportunity to really get out what we are doing and what our goals are about our department.
So I suspect you feel more on a daily basis like an educator as opposed to just a probation officer.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, sounds like a
great
program.
And a trainer too, because we have over 60% new staff. And so it's really creating a new culture with this group.
Terrific, so. Thank you. Chief.
So, you know, for me, I think it's nice to see things come to fruition. I mean, this was a program that we started talking about in 2008. Kim Barrett was the chief before me, and she was the chief at the time who had this idea of doing a treatment program and actually wrote the grant for the juvenile hall expansion. And we were awarded the grant in a competitive process with the state of California back in 2009. And it's been a long road to get there to build the expansion piece. We got the grant at the time the recession hit, and whether the county was able to spend the money or not, or the state, we really had to kind of wait to see where that landed. And I'm appreciative of the county, moving forward with the project and completing the construction. And now we have, a great expansion of the juvenile hall, things that we, are going to be there for many, many years into the future, and really prepare this county to have a really safe and outstanding juvenile hall, well into the future. But more importantly, for the first time in San Luis Obispo County, we have a custodial treatment program that we can call our own. That is our treatment program. And really, we get to treat our kids here in our county, which to me is the most important thing. As a community, there's nothing more important than raising your children in your community. And for us to be able to do that and keep our kids here and work with them, integrate them back into the community, and make them feel part of our community and everything we do is important. And so for San Luis Obispo County, I think the Central Valley Academy is, a huge plus that we've never had before and that we have now. And I'm hopeful and thankful that we'll have this well into the future, and it'll continue to be a great resource for our community and continue to work on rehabilitating our youth that need to get back on the straight and narrow, but more importantly, protect the community by, reducing recidivism and reducing crime.
Real quick, I've got a few extra seconds. I'm going to jump in with this. What did the two kids that walked away, for your first two walkaways, what was their explanation for walking? Just to see if they could? I don't know. Did you have time for that?
It was actually just impulse. And one of them really probably was never invested in the program, and he's now not back in the program. The other kid immediately regretted it. And I was one of the officers that helped get him after 5 hours, and I just looked at him, and he's just – I messed up. He just was – and now he's back. He had to do some restorative justice in order to get back. Mm-hmm. But he's now back with us. So it was just impulse control.
Yeah. Glad to hear about it. I hope maybe in a few years some of your graduates can come talk with us about what they've been through, and maybe you may end up grooming some good public speakers from these kind of programs.
Absolutely.
Because what people who have been in that kind of environment before have to say to youth behind them is sometimes very good.
Mm-hmm.
I thank you very much.
Thank you.
This has been a great program, and as you know, this is Central Coast Voices, and now I get to do my little exit information, which everybody's heard before, which that is to remind you that this is a project of Action for Healthy Communities, which is also a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. For those of you who may not be aware of it, we put out a report every 3 years called Vital Signs, Understanding San Luis Obispo County. It's available as a downloadable extensive report about the condition of the county at actionslo.org. Next week, Chris Kington Barker will be with you, and she'll be speaking with the folks from FEED, Farmer Experiential Education and Development Program. Members of the Cal Poly Extended Education Program and private farming community are working with agricultural training programs on a sustainable agricultural designed to educate our veterans and members of our community in how to build sustainable communities through agriculture. Central Coast Voices, as I said, is a project of Action for Healthy Communities. I want to thank our primary underwriting sponsor, Joan Gellert Sargent, for all of her support of this program on an ongoing basis for a very long time. You can reach us at voices@kcbx.org and at 543-2323. This has been Central Coast Voices, and we thank KCBX for their ongoing support of this program also, and to Jim Saleo and to Marguerite Harris for their incredible work with us today. And I thank you for a great program. This has been Central Coast Voices.